Argument has been waived by the appellant's counsel. Attorney General, but for the brief of appellant, has free ride, so go right ahead when you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court, Donald Jeffrey on behalf of the Commonwealth here. Obviously, this case has more facts than you can imagine, but I'm going to try to distill for argument purposes what I think are the key issues for you at this point. This case is a motion to vacate. Was filed about 5 years after conviction due to alleged fraud on the part of a police detective in obtaining a search warrant. There was a proffer related to several affidavits he had given for warrants, five of those, the fourth of which was the one for the defendant's residence in this case. Most of the evidence was presented by proffer, but a significant piece of evidence was also testimony by Lieutenant Corrigan of the Richmond Police Department, who was a records custodian, who took over after all of these warrants were issued in these affidavits. After the trial judge heard the testimony, he found that there was not clear and convincing evidence of fraud, and he denied the motion. And I think, to sort of get to the key facts here, as far as the...
Well, to be more specific, not clear and convincing evidence of fraud in this case.
In this case, correct. Correct. And that's what he focused in on. And he specifically, after hearing all of this evidence, the judge said, essentially, and this starts at about page 98 and goes to 103 of the appendix, a very short part of the appendix. Tell me what's false. And up on page 99, the Commonwealth says, the biggest concern is the assertion that 13 individuals were arrested based on his information. Lieutenant Corrigan, he's the records custodian, puts it at 2 or 3. And there was significant testimony from Lieutenant Corrigan regarding the disarray that the records were in when he took over, and the court referred to those as accounting records and said, you know, that's what essentially, I'm not going to rely on that to find that this is false. The other thing that the Commonwealth put its finger on was, and I've assumed in this case, because this was a joint motion, that anything the Commonwealth argued is properly before this court on behalf of the defendant, because he did adopt it. The other thing that he pointed to was that the number of search warrants was different from what was in the record, but significantly, the affidavit actually lowballed that. The written records of the police department showed 4, and there were actually 3 that had been obtained in the past based on information from this confidential informant. So those were really the two things that were before the court in terms of what was argued as far as what's false, and the court denied the motion. Again, just to kind of reiterate the legal standards, it's clear and convincing. Yesterday the court adopted that alternate terminology, highly probable, as far as what the standard is for clear and convincing evidence. And I think the key elements of fraud here, in this case, the ones that are in dispute, were the false representation of a material fact. I don't think there's any question about reliance or that any reliance would have been reasonable. And in light of the questions the trial judge asked and the comments that I just made in terms of the flaws in that evidence, I don't believe that the decision of the trial court was plainly wrong.
So, counsel, I must say, this comes to us in an unusual posture, because even though it wasn't the office of the Attorney General arguing it at the trial level, it was the Commonwealth. It was the Commonwealth's motion.
Yes, sir.
The Commonwealth's motion was denied because there was not clear and convincing evidence. And now you're standing up here as the appellee saying, well, it was correctly denied because there wasn't clear and convincing evidence. Under different circumstances, we might call this approbating and reprobating. Would you at least acknowledge that this is, that the posture is that the Commonwealth has changed its position, and because it went from the city to the office of the Attorney General?
Oh, I would absolutely acknowledge that, okay. Your Honor, and I anticipated that someone might ask me that question.
And indeed it has been.
I think these are the things that you have going on here. You know, whether you call it a stipulation or a legal concession, the trial judge wasn't bound by that. That's, I think, the first issue. The second issue is, once the trial judge, who under separation of powers addresses this, and there is a judgment adverse to the defendant, under the Code of Virginia 2.2-511, my office has not just the right, but the obligation, I think, to defend that.
No, I do understand that. Let's go actually to safer ground. The argument below was that it was extrinsic fraud, which
correct.
Requires the motion to be proven by clear and convincing evidence. The judge laid his finger on it and said, I actually think this was intrinsic fraud, which is voidable, not void, and that ground hasn't been appealed to us, has it?
It has not,
no. So we have a Manchester Oaks issue as well as the other issues that it was.
I would agree with you. I will say, Justice Mims, yeah, I think the issue would be, is assignment of error one adequate to bring that intrinsic fraud issue before you?
And in fact, if we were looking at this in the abstract, it is intrinsic fraud, is it not? A false affidavit.
That's what the trial judge found.
Yeah.
And the court obviously is aware that there is a reference in the record to my office having advised the Commonwealth's attorney that we believe that that situation was extrinsic. I don't think that we have a clear answer in our case law. I will tell you, I looked for a clear answer in our case law, and as I think I pointed this out in my brief. I think the crux of it would be, it's clearly alleged perjury. No question about that. The crux of the issue is going to be, is the fact that it occurred in an ex parte proceeding before the magistrate dispositive? Essentially, would that make it extrinsic, or is that part of the proceeding so intrinsic, integrally linked to the criminal trial itself that it makes it intrinsic? I don't think that this court's ever addressed that issue. I couldn't find anything from any court anywhere that had ever addressed it. I will say that Franks versus Delaware has some interesting language about the ex parte nature of it. Proceeding, but that obviously doesn't answer the extrinsic-intrinsic dichotomy.
Based upon the posture of this case, the appellant would have had to bring both the extrinsic and the intrinsic arguments before the court, based upon what Judge Cubito found.
Yes, he would have, and I will say this, because I know that there is maybe some friction in the case law in terms of how specific an assignment of error has to be. But I don't think that he really develops an argument that it wasn't intrinsic, if that's responsive to your question.
Oh.
So it was an alternate finding. That certainly would be a basis on which the court could affirm. And I don't really have anything else to say on that point.
Well, it's your assignment of error gets that issue before it because it's either extrinsic or intrinsic, one or the other. So it's assignment error number one. Places your question force, doesn't it? If you failed to establish an error to fail to establish extrinsic fraud, it either has to be intrinsic fraud or no fraud at all.
I didn't argue that the assignment of error was defective, and I'm not changing my position on that, Chief Justice Lemons. I guess my quarrel would be if there is one that there's not really argument developed in terms of why it wasn't intrinsic, if that makes any sense.
A bad brief waiver as opposed to an assignment of error defect.
Yes, sir. I think the way I understand this case is this court's case law on assignments of error. I think there's a good argument that assignment is actually adequate to preserve it. I think.
But then there's no argument on the intrinsic. But the assignment is satisfactory, barely.
Yes,
but there is no argument on brief or obviously
correct.
Before the court about the intrinsic fraud issue.
A J type of waiver as opposed to an assignment of error, a 5-7 type of waiver.
So is the case in the right place?
I believe that it is under Southerly. Unlike in Williams, we don't have a statute like 19.2-296 in the criminal system. The only one that even arguably applies, I think, is 801-428, which is clearly not of the same ilk as 19.2-296. So I would say yes. And and for the reasons the Court of Appeals stated.
Assignment of error is the Court of Appeals erred in holding it lacks jurisdiction to hear this appeal?
Yes.
And you're here on that assignment of error, and you're telling me that you actually disagree that the Court of Appeals did have jurisdiction. Is that correct?
No.
Are you saying the opposite?
No. It starts here.
All right. It starts here.
Right.
All right.
The defendant wants to go back to the Court of Appeals. Our position is that it starts here and stays here.
All right.
Per Southerly. Unless the Court has additional questions, I ask you to affirm.
All right. Well, we've had at least two cases today that are very odd. And this one certainly falls in that category.
One of the strange ones I've ever seen.
All right. Well, thank you for your argument. The Court is adjourned.